digital while you can, like capturing them and then making a video file. Sounds like a good idea in the meantime.
No, it sounds like a terrible, terrible idea. So time consuming. Because it's one time consuming.
Yeah, it is that. But once you've done it, you've got that file, and you don't have to worry about really destroying the potentially destroying the tape.
Because I remember, but damn.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, if it's a movie you love, you won't mind watching it anyways, and then you'll have a digital format that you could, you know, pop on a big screen and show your friends anytime.
What do you want to watch? Mano's Hands of Fate? I mean, Jesus. Like, that's the thing. It's like, granted, yeah, sure, not all movies that have been put on VHS have been put on DVD or Blu-ray, but
not
those
all of
are usually
are really...
the shittiest ones, right? Let's be serious.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I've been listening to my friend I mentioned earlier, Brian, and his podcast talking about, like, you know, old movies and shit like that. Mm-hmm. He has it's a junk food cinema, and they talk about old movies and, like, movies that a lot of people just don't know about, and so a lot of the history in them and shit like that. And he's mentioned a bunch that I've really, like, I really want to see that movie and just can't seem to find, so.
Do you mean, like, that movie sounds absolutely atrociously terrible, I have to see that?
A bit of both.
Okay.
Like some of them are like, you know, they're train wrecks, but, like, if you hear, like, you could appreciate the train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
And others are generally, like, overlooked gems that just, like, did not get the attention they deserved.
Well, Such things anyways, do exist.
Yeah. Anyways, this is the Wayward Podcast. Getting to the intro about now, I suppose. I'm Toshi, and I'm here with...
Richard Eisenbeis, also fellow writer at Kotaku, yes.
Yes. Speaking of Kotaku and what we do, writing about video games, a lot's happened in the past 3 weeks, and one of them was, notably, we talked about it briefly last time, was TGS, Tokyo Game Show, 2015. So, and we had fun running around, didn't we?
Yeah, no, it's exhausting, just... Every year, so damned exhausting. Not bad, just, you know, we come out of it so tired.
Yes. But what was your impression of this year's?
Well, it was an okay TGS. It just suffers from the fact that it's the first one in several years where nothing new has been shown off. Like, we've really actually had a pretty good string of things. It was like, first, yeah. It was like, oh, guess what? Move is coming, and yeah. Kinect is coming, and then the next time it was like, the Vita is coming, and then the time after that it was, oh, the PS4 and the 3 or and the Xbox One are coming, and you know we've been, and then it was the next year it was like, oh, VR is coming, so we've just had this string of years where every year there's been some major hardware development to focus the show around, but this time we're just software and. No Microsoft was there, no Nintendo was there, and so, yeah, we saw some interesting-looking games, for sure, but yeah. No real blockbusters I can think of. I mean, other than, like, Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront, but, like, you know, that's not even a Japanese game, so...
Yeah, nothing uniquely Japan, I suppose.
Yeah, although that's not to say there weren't plenty of games I want to play, but... The no-shows were conspicuous. No Persona versus Fire Emblem. No Persona 5. Like, okay, sure, stage show or whatever, but no, not playable.
Actually, Persona 5 was delayed.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Like, it was, they announced the delay, like, during TGS, which was kind of a... Like, it was at night or evening or night or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Is...
It was on their stream after the close of business. Yeah. Like, oh, by the way...
Yeah,
hope nobody's watching here, but...
but our game's not coming out when we said it would.
But, yeah. I mean, I think that was pretty obvious to anyone who was paying any sort of attention.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, they're not showing this off, they're not running commercials, they've just shown another trailer, but half of it is old stuff. Like, I mean, come on, that's writing on the wall for game not finished, come back later.
Yeah. Speaking of which, what was Final Fantasy 15?
Also not shown.
Yeah, just all we got to see all we got to see was, like, chocobos, I think. Well, that was about it.
Yeah, I mean, and we already knew chocobos were in the damn game. I mean, they're in the demo. You don't get to ride them, but they're there, you know. Nobody's...
Yeah.
I don't think anybody was like, man, I wonder if we're going to get to ride chocobos. I think everybody's like, no crap, we're going to ride chocobos. Duh.
Well, they did confirm that there are not going to be any Moogles, but...
Yeah, which is disappointing. Like, the idea that it's like, oh, Moogles don't fit. Moogles don't fit in this world. Moogles fit in every world. I promise. I promise. There's not a world that exists that doesn't need Moogles, aren't included. Like, you don't have to... Like, they can be an underground civilization or extra-dimensional beings. I don't care. But throw in a Moogle, for God's sakes. I mean, even Seven...
You don't even have to make them talk.
I mean, shoot. Seven didn't have Moogles either, but Seven had a video game where you played as a Moogle in the video game. So, you know.
God, I played that thing way too much.
The Moogle Hut?
The snowboarding.
Oh, snowboarding. I don't think it's in the snowboarding, but it is in Moogle Hut in the Gold Saucer.
Oh shit! No, I'm sorry. No, that was the cactus. I was thinking.
Oh, is the cactar really in snowboarding? I never played a lot of snowboarding. I admit.
I kind of got a little too into that. Basically, once you complete a run on the course, it basically saves your run as a ghost, and that's the cactus. So you're basically, when you go again, you're racing against yourself. And I know it's myself, yet every time I played it and it beat me, I was get so pissed.
Even though it's like, damn it, why is past me so much better than present me?
Yeah, and then when I beat, and I know that even if I beat it, I'm going to end up having to go up against that one. And so, yeah. But it had a fun rating system. Like, it would go the same ranker, like B, C, was it C, B, A, and then it would S, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, the top rank was abnormal.
Mm.
Like, the title was abnormal. Nice. It's like good, good, you know, super, great, excellent. Yeah, so, and then it calls you abnormal. It's like, you're playing this game way too
weird
much. You're the freak. Please stop. Yeah.
So did you play the remake of it?
No.
The snowboarding?
No. Nope.
You were so into it, and you didn't play the remake.
No, I mean, a lot of remakes... I've been kind of burned on Renix, a lot of them, and I, interestingly enough, a lot of them have been Square Enix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they'd announced this a while ago, but they were showing it off some at the show. Was the remake of, I think it's like Final Fantasy Legends, is it called, in the West?
Oh, it's Saga.
It's the original
Romancing Saga.
Well, no, it's the original. What's it called? Secret of Mana, the Mana series.
Oh, it's Mana, not Saga. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I thought it was Saga. I thought Legends. I thought Legends was Saga, but if you say it's Mana, then it must be Mana.
Yeah. Well, there was the Final Fantasy side stories that came out on the Game Boy. One of them was the original Secret of Mana or Legend of Mana. And then there was the Saga series, which was. They weren't romancing a saga or anything, that they were just saga series, but they were all bunched together as, like, Final Fantasy Legends.
Yeah, and then they also had Final Fantasy Adventure, which was also on the Game Boy. And honestly, I still get confused. I always have to look it up whenever I talk about it.
I don't remember which is which either, but did I tell you about this? That was, like, the first video game that ever made me cry.
It was Final Fantasy Legend?
I think so. I think it's either Final Fantasy Legend or Adventure. It's one or the other. It's the one that was the very first Secret of Mana.
Hmm. Interesting.
It was, that was the first. It was on the Game Boy. It was the first game that ever made me cry.
Oh.
And they remade it for the Game Boy Advance, I think. And it was pretty terrible. And now they're remaking it again.
Hmm.
And I'm really skeptical about it because they've remade that. They remade that once on the Game Boy Advance. They also remade, like, Saga 2 and 3. They both also remade both of those originally on the Game Boy for the DS. And those were subpar, too.
Hmm.
Yeah, so the Square Enix does not have a great track record in my mind about their remakes.
No. Like the Chrono Trigger remake for the DS is the best version of the game, without a doubt. Like, don't get me wrong, I love the Super Nintendo version. I love playing the occasional PlayStation version just for the Akira Toriyama, you know, full motion videos. Sure, that's cool. But all the little extras, the extra plot stuff that connects the game to Chrono Cross that's found only in the GBA version, or sorry, DS version, really makes it the best version of the game, in my personal humble opinion. I'm not saying you shouldn't play the other versions, but... And I also love how it puts all the... You can choose to put all the battle menu and stuff on the lower screen, so you get a wider view of the battle arena on the top screen. So, yeah. It's fun to play, like, with an actual DS, or if you're one of those terrible, horrible people who uses emulators, you can just put the whole, you know, big screen up on one screen and, you know, play it that way.
Yeah, but that's still, that's one good remake.
Well, that, Six was better, too, on its GBA, I think?
Game Boy Advance, but that wasn't necessarily a remake. That was more of a port.
No. They added in the Kaiser Dragon.
Yeah, they added things.
They retranslated the entire game.
Did they make it? The things I'm talking about are their remakes.
You mean
the
straight up one? Well, if we go, like, if you want, like, full overhaul of absolutely everything sans plot, the 4 remake was pretty good.
Okay.
The Final Fantasy 4 remake. Didn't they do that with 5, too? I don't know. I never played it, but...
I do not remember.
I think they did it with 5, too. I know they did it with 3. Yeah.
They did that with 3, but apparently the original was so terrible, that's the only one they haven't re-released in its original form.
Yeah, like, they did a lot of extra adding plot stuff, as far as I remember, to 3, which was
The Final Fantasy IV, that was a full-on remake.
Yeah, that one was absolutely full-on.
Yeah.
I don't particularly like the remakes, like the full flat-on remakes of 6 that they did for ISO, and I guess maybe they're going to do it for Steam. I don't like I would prefer to have a pixel sprite to whatever the weird chibi thing they're doing is.
I don't know,
it looks too smooth, and it looks like a kid made it. At least a pixel art, it looks like an adult made the thing.
So what are your thoughts on the Final Fantasy VII remake, which is totally going to happen at some time in the future?
Well, they're actually supposedly working on it, but...
Yeah.
I don't personally understand how Nomura is directing 2 games at once, but okay, sure.
Well, he was supposedly directing 2 games at once with Kingdom Hearts 3 and Final Fantasy.
No, that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong.
I know.
From the start, there was no Kingdom Hearts 3. The entire team, as soon as they finished Kingdom Hearts 2, the entire team started on Versus and sat on Versus for years. And then when Versus got canceled, which it did, and before Tabata, you know, the project was restarted under Tabata with a completely new plot, and the only thing that remained was the characters. Like, before that happened, all those people were transferred to the Final Fantasy 13 team.
Yeah.
Where, guess what? They sat cranking out 2 other sequels, right? Now that that's all done, yeah, sure, the team is free to make Kingdom Hearts 3. But that's the reason we haven't had a Kingdom Hearts 3, is just because the entire team who made 2 has been doing other stuff. Now, don't get me wrong, we lucked out. Like, the people who made Birth by Sleep made a really good combat system that played better than the other Kingdom Hearts. Like, but we just lucked out like that, since it wasn't the same team, you know what I mean? It was just another group of people who were told to make a spinoff, and they turned out making something really good. And then they just, you know, kept doing that over and over on Dream Drop Distance. But
Okay, so my mistake. I assumed that Nomura had been multitasking, like he seems to do.
No. Yeah, like don't get me wrong, I'm sure he did writing stuff for all of those, for all the Kingdom Hearts games. But, like, 3 was never in production. People just assumed it was. But it couldn't have been. Square Enix, they have several production teams, and certain teams work on certain series, and that's what happens. And you don't, instead of building a team from scratch every single game, you usually keep the same, as much as you can, the same kind of team together, which is why you get games that feel similar. Like, a lot of Tabata's games feel similar. And, of course, part of that's because he's the director. A lot of that's because a lot of the people under him are the same. So, you know.
Yeah. You don't get a new team, you just make a new engine.
Or use the same one. I'm relatively sure that... okay. I think. Let me step back from relatively sure to... I think that both Crisis Core and Type Zero run on the same engine.
I would not be surprised.
They feel the same. They dodge all the same. And I think, and I bet you that, Birth by Sleep is also the same engine. Because they all have very similar, like the dodge roll in all three of those feels exactly the same.
Hmm. I'm talking about like their Final Fantasy track record up until...
Yeah. Yeah. So, but anyway, sorry. Regardless of that fun little thing, we'll see how... Like, the 7 remake. Honestly, you know what I would want? If I had, my say? I want painted backgrounds again. Honestly.
Oh, the still camp?
Yeah. Yeah, like I like... Well, because that's why 7 still looks fantastic to this day, is because all of the backgrounds are painted things, are painted murals, basically. Hmm. And the pathing and the walls are basically invisible walls that fit in with the painting. So really, if you update the cloud sprite, hell, I'd like it if you made it cartoony, not cartoony, not necessarily anime or anything, but like made it in the same art style as the backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make the battles look as pretty as you want. I don't particularly care. Go for it. As for new content, because I know that that he's spoken about doing like big rewrites and adding in things. I love Final Fantasy VII, but there were some plot holes. There were some things that were never properly explained. There were huge things you could miss. I feel like, especially back in the day when we had secret characters like Yuffie and Vincent and Umaro and Gogo and, all of them, like when we had secret characters, they were written in such a way that they wouldn't be vital to the plot. Which meant they were never vital to the plot, like the main story, which kind of shortchanged them as characters.
Yeah.
It's like you do their side quest and then they stand in the background and throw a couple one-liners out, but they're never at the center of the action again. Especially when somebody like Vincent, who should be so freaking key to the story. that's why you can make... I know a lot of people don't like Dirge of Cerberus, but I really like Dirge of Cerberus. I like it a lot because... Basically, it deals with the fact that, hey, Vincent's probably the most key character in this whole thing next to Cloud.
Yeah.
He has so much to do with this story.
So
I don't know. That's good. But I think we'll get a lot of changes that people won't like. A lot of extra stuff that nobody asked for, nobody wanted. But there's things that can be fixed, like revamp Chocobo breeding. Make it 1,000 times more complex and interesting.
Yeah.
Fix up the racing mechanic, fix some of the mini games. Nobody likes climbing the mountainside where they have to juggle their body temperature and climbing.
Oh, God.
Nobody likes that. Nobody's going, oh, man, I can't wait to play that again. And snowboarding, you may have loved it, but I think most people were just kind of like, I'm going down a mountain. And I never wanted to go back because it was such a damned hassle to get back to the airship after you went down the damn mountain. or the Chocobo, I guess. I don't remember what you had to do to get to it. There's lots of good advancements you could make. You could, let's be serious. Gaming's greatest myth from when we were kids, that's going to be in there. You're going to be able to revive Aerith. It's going to be in the damn game.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be.
It really shouldn't. Yeah. But it's going to be.
It's going to be. Despite the fact that messes with absolutely every sequel that they've had to the game.
So much for what was it? AC?
Yeah,
they
won't get it. Because it's like the whole point of the death is like that it has such meaningful, lasting consequences. Like, don't get me wrong. I wanted Tifa from day one. But that didn't mean I hated Aerith. And I certainly didn't want her to die. And I was pretty shocked when it happened. And I had played Chrono Trigger shortly before. So I was like, oh, well, we'll somehow resurrect her, right? And the fact that we don't is a good thing. And I like how she's used in
subsequent
in the sequels, yeah. Where it's basically like she's ascended almost. She's Obi-Wan, you know. She's looking out for her, like she has godlike powers. She controls basically the life stream because she's the last, you know, Cetra. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, even in, what was it, Crisis Core.
Yeah, even in Crisis Core, she has...
Knowing that she is going to die.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah.
Crisis Core is absolutely necessary for Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
I really believe that. I believe it added to the story. It dramatically added. Yeah. In a good way. I'm sure that there are some little negatives, sure. But I feel that it was a dramatic addition, especially when it comes to the character of Aerith.
I mean, yeah, I mean, Aerith, also Zax.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the sort of other characters, like, there's another, like, Sephiroth-ish guy, not sort of inconsequential, like, Zax's predecessor, his, like,
yeah,
sort
Angel?
Of his mentor.
I don't know if we needed Angel. I was okay with Genesis. I was okay with G. I was okay with Gackt, okay? having Gackt show up. Like, I think that's what a lot of the American players of Crisis Core missed out on is the fact that it's Gackt, and if you're in Japan, you know who Gackt is. And like
he was, I mean, he wasn't necessarily like all that vital. I mean,
well, he's the final boss of the damn game.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have Sephiroth be the boss of every single game.
Yeah.
So I mean, it made sense. And I mean, honestly, even the final battle with him was much less. You know, it was. I hardly remember it, but I do remember.
I remember the ending.
Final battle.
Yeah, I remember the ending. But that was the good thing. Like, that's I think why Crisis Core is such kind of like this PSP masterpiece is because we knew the ending going in.
Yeah,
we all knew how it ends. It ends horribly. It's a tragedy. But can you? I want you to think about that. I can think of. Almost no other games, really, that are tragedies. Most games, I take that back. Final Fantasy Tactics is a tragedy as well. But
I haven't played it, so I can't say.
But besides Crisis Core and Final Fantasy Tactics, those are tragedies. Most games are heroic narratives, right?
Yeah.
You come out of it, you know, you're the winner. You've overcome all obstacles. You've saved the world or whatever. Not in Tactics, and certainly not in Crisis Core. In Crisis Core, you've saved the world from a threat nobody even knew existed, really, or nobody really cared about, or was super worried about.
Yeah.
But what it did is it promises that Seven will happen, right?
Yeah.
Like, it sets up the promise that one day, it's gonna be okay. The costs are gonna be high, but the world will be okay. And it will be okay because of this one guy saving one kid.
Oh, God, I love that game.
Yeah, man, that ending, God. I watch that ending every once in a while. And I'm just like every time I watch it, you talk about things that make you want to cry.
Yeah.
Like,
I have that. Like, I think I've mentioned on the podcast before. Like, I have a folder of videos that make me cry.
Honestly, no, I think that did make me cry. Like, as a 20-something-year-old man. Like in, like, 23, 24 when that came out. Yeah. I remember, because, like, it wasn't necessarily the death scene or the passing the sword. It was literally his final line that did it to me. Yeah. Because it had been such a theme over the whole thing was, what is a hero? Like, that's the theme of Crisis Core. Who is a hero? What does it take to be a hero? And when his final line is, like, you know, as it zooms away, shows Midgar, shows Cloud dragging the Buster Sword in, like, his, you know, decayed state or whatever. And, you know, and the last line is, hey, I wonder if I finally became a hero. Credits. Like, and the song is really good. They changed it in the American version. I don't know if you knew that. But
really?
They didn't know. Why does not play as the credit song, I don't think. I'm relatively sure they put random FF7 instrumentals instead. But the song that they use in Japanese is really good at that part. And it's just so sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know what I mean? Like, but like, that's the whole thing is like, yeah, bro, you became a hero. You saved the world. You saved everything. Because if it weren't for you, there would be no Cloud. And without no Cloud, there is no Final Fantasy VII. The bad guys, Sephiroth wins. Like, that's it. And so, yeah, and just, boy, did it make Aerith's story so much sadder, too. Right? Poor yeah. Aerith. I mean...
Ooh. Yeah. And it even ties into, what was it, Advent Children.
And Dirge of Cerberus. They tie in.
Yeah.
They all
that's
tie
a nice,
together.
That's all a nice package, but do you think they're going to be able to do that with the remake of 7? Like, well, no, but well,
I'm afraid they will. Like, that's what I'm afraid they'll try to do, is try to make it fit better with all the others. And I don't think it needs to. I think that was Crisis Core's job. Yeah. And Crisis Core did it. You know? Because in the end of Dirge of Cerberus, and the secret ending of Dirge of Cerberus, you learn that Genesis is still alive. And
did not know that. And I've never played the game.
There you go. There's your spoiler for it. But that's the interesting thing, is that there is someone of Sephiroth levels of power still left alive, and that he's been waiting, and we don't know really why he's been waiting or anything about it. But it's an interesting thing. So I would almost rather have a Final Fantasy VII 2 that deals with even years down the road. With Genesis, because since it appears he doesn't age. Kind of like Sephiroth apparently didn't age either. And I don't know. It's kind of sad that it just dropped off. Like, don't get me wrong. As far as a third-person action shooter, Dirge of Cerberus is not a great game. But the plot was good. Because it basically was like, here is the resolution of Vincent's storyline. Which he didn't get in 7. So,
no.
Okay. And I have to say, though, you've never played Dirge of Cerberus?
No.
So since it was made after Advent Children, they had all the resources from Advent Children.
Yeah, I do know that.
And so you have some, like, there's the highlight of the whole game is, like, right
the movies,
before the final battle. Yeah, it's when Vincent basically has to give up and say, all right, we got to call in the team on this one. And he calls in, you know, the whole cast of 7. And it's this massive airship battle, like Cid's fleet of airships and, like, motorcycles and, like, Tiffin Barrett in a truck with rocket launchers and Cloud fighting one of the big bad guys by himself. And, you know, like, just this amazing, like, good thing. But it's also set up so that Vincent has to be the hero, which is good. Because... if not, then why didn't you just call in Cloud at the beginning, right? and it's a very believable thing, you know, it has to do with, like, the Chaos Materia, which he has in 7, and all that stuff, and how it all goes together, and good story. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, it wasn't changing the world, but it was interesting to see how the world comes together after 7, right? I also liked Advent Children, so people can throw fire at me.
No, I loved Advent Children. So.
Or you liked Advent Children?
No.
I saw that in the theaters. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, really?
I won a ticket. I was a college student here in Japan when it came out, and I thought I was entering to buy a ticket, but I was actually entering to win a ticket. And when I won it, I was like, so I go there, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I have it. And I'm like, how much is it? And they're like, oh, no, you have a VIP pass. Go on in. I was like, oh, all right. Nice.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I had it on Blu-ray, which got lent and never returned. And I also have it on PSP UMD, which,
nice.
Which came with the soundtrack, which I really like.
Oh, it came with the soundtrack.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Had a good soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
But then it was all Black Mage's remixes, right?
Yep. And all excellent. So
yes, welcome to the Final Fantasy VII podcast.
God, last time was the Metal Gear Solid one. Now it's the Final Fantasy podcast. What else? Yep. Sorry. Completely derailed talk of TGS with that. But
I'd rather talk about Final Fantasy VII than TGS.
One thing I do want to mention about this year's TGS was. I went in like with a healthy dose of skepticism on like, you know, I was like, cause like you said, there's no hardware, there's no real hardware. I mean, unless they suddenly announce something really huge, which seemed nigh impossible.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing is that like, because TGS comes after E3 and then they've got Gamescom between that,
Yeah.
Like, it always, it's like, it's like it always feels like he just basically gets the scraps.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, we get the leftover stuff. So, I mean, I'm always worried we're not going to have stuff to write about. It's like, and like, last year, I really enjoyed because I felt genuine enthusiasm from everybody.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there may not have been all that, well, like, I mean, there was stuff, but, I mean, there may not have been all that groundbreaking stuff aside from, like, the hard, like, you know, hardware, but, like, the PS4 or shit like that, but, like, everyone was genuinely pumped, and I really liked that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this year I was just like, you know, what are the, you know, I don't see that happening this year, and I went in, and then there was the PlayStation, the Sony press conference that they had on the, like, the Tuesday, like, the TGS starts on Thursday, and 2 days before they had the pre-conference with Sony, and that kind of blew me away. Like, I went into going, oh god, like, because, again, last year, the Sony pre-TGS press conference was basically their stuff for Asia.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically talking about, like, you know, we're going to be sent, you know, games that are already out in Japan that are getting a Chinese release.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
And this time it was, like, actually a press conference.
Oh, yeah. So I was just, and I, like, I couldn't even get into last year's, because, like, they were really, really stingy about, like, press passes.
This isn't for you.
Yeah, this is for Asia, so, like, only, like, print media and, like, you know, like, not non-games media, for some reason.
Yeah.
Just like, so, like, our editor got in, because he does other stuff. Mm-hmm. On the side, which gave him credentials that he could get in.
Yeah.
But I couldn't, was right. The thing. And so I was just basically, you know, off to the side watching a stream and just going, these are all games you've already announced for Japan that are just getting
localized. Chinese, yeah.
Yeah, getting localized for China because China has lifted their ban on consoles. Mm-hmm. And this year we went in and it's just like, is this going to be the same thing as last year? Is it going to be? And then they came out. The president came out and he said a few words and, you know, showed a video and I was just like, yeah, you know. And then they brought out, and then, like, he left the stage. I'm like, where are you going? So I was expecting him to, like, be there for, like, you know, 10, 15 minutes, but he was, like,
just
gone.
Rambling,
like, three.
Right? But no.
Yeah, he was gone. Like, you know, he came up, showed the video, bye. And it's just like, what? And then another person comes out. And then he talks for maybe like 3 minutes, and then he's gone. And I was just like, and then they were showing video after video of new games. So I was just like, oh my god, this is a complete barrage. And it was an overwhelming amount of new stuff mm-hmm. that I was not expecting. And a lot of it, I was genuinely like, oh, that looks cool. Oh, that looks cool. And it wasn't just like, stuff with the new hardware where they're always showing like, it can do this, it has this mm-hmm. feature. No, it was just games, so I was just like, oh, I like that. That looks fun. I like that. That looks interesting. And stuff I was genuinely interested, you know. And so it was just like, by the time I was got out of that, I was, my opinion had flipped 180. So I had those, I was much more hyped going into TGS this year.
Mm. Yeah, and the other thing that's kind of got me coming out of TGS is this, is mm-hmm. How many games did we play on the Vita, right? Like there were a fair amount of Vita games there. There were a lot of Vita games there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess I get kind of annoyed when people are like, oh, the Vita, it's such a failure. Guys, the Vita has sold more than the Wii U. Oh. It is 1 million behind the Xbox One in sales worldwide. Yeah. Okay? So, I mean, so it kind of gets me whenever people talk about that. Like, I'm not saying it hasn't failed in America, but it's not a failure of system, right?
No.
Unless you're saying that the Xbox One is a complete failure, the Vita is not a failure. If you're saying the Wii U is a complete failure, you know, you have to say it for all three. You can't just be like, oh, well, I don't play the Vita, therefore it is failure. That is, you know, it's logic flaw there.
Yeah, but I mean, I would say that support for it is waning. I mean, like, Sony, I don't know.
Sony has said, like, that's the weird thing. Sony's basically said they're not doing first-party games for it.
Yeah. Which they should, honestly.
Yeah, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but at the same time, who cares? Like, we're going to keep getting lots of games for it coming out of Japan. Because you can do that. You can put a game on PS4 and Vita with marginal extra cost.
Yeah.
Like, especially compared to, like, putting it on PS3 and 360. Yeah. Like, I mean, shoot. For example, like, right now, in the world as it stands today, like, according to August 1st sales results, the eighth most popular game in the world right now, eighth bestseller in the world right now, this last week, or in the week of the 1st of August, so a couple weeks ago.
Last week of September, 1st of October.
No, I'm sorry. I guess I'm looking at an older chart than I thought I was.
Oh, okay.
But either way, like, okay, we'll say, a month ago, you know, the EA Vocaloid game was the eighth best in the world. It's on the Vita. You know.
Wow.
Yes, the Vita's a total failure. Yes, absolutely. No. A game that is only sold in Japan is on the Vita is selling so well that it's on the number eight in global sales. So I don't know that I don't know why it gets in my craw. Maybe it's because so many good games I play these days are on the Vita.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Like, yeah, like let's look at I played EA VT. I played. It's not a great game, but I played Ray Gigant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm playing Digimon.
Mm-hmm.
Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be buying Steins Gate Zero on the Vita. Absolutely.
I mean, I played Trillion this year, and that is without a doubt going on my top five.
What about, like, wasn't the new God Eaters Vita, right?
Yep. Vita and PS4, I believe. It's a remake of the first one, though. So I don't know how much it would count. But it's still, I mean, God Eater is a solid game that I would stand behind.
I mean, Minecraft does well on it here in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yep, Minecraft's still selling here.
That there's a game that they're really pushing. Was it Tokyo Xanadu?
Yeah, that looks pretty interesting.
I'm probably going to get that because I thought it was going to be just your standard RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's an action RPG, which is kind of my jam.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably going to be picking that up tomorrow.
Yeah. So you see what I mean? Like, it's doing fine, guys. Like, that's the whole thing that gets me. Like, it's doing better than the Wii U. It's doing almost as well as the Xbox One. Yeah. I mean, it's not doing well as the 3DS, but guess what? Nothing's well. Like, the 3DS is doing twice as well as the PS4.
I mean, yeah.
And they're number two, right? So
yeah,
it's just one of those things that gets in my craw when it's like, oh, it's a failure. Sony failed at this. Blah, blah, blah. They could have handled it better. I'm not going to lie, but at the same time, sorry. I mean, it's doing okay.
Yeah, it is. It is probably my favorite console. It's
like that's
extremely versatile and
I mean, okay, like. Basically, with the Vita and the Vita TV as a combination, I have the system I've always dreamed of. I come home, I play a game in surround sound on my big giant TV, and then it's like, oh, I've got to go to work, or oh, I got to go to a convention, or whatever. And I go, pop memory card, pop game, slide it into the portable Vita, turn it on, and I'm gone. Like, isn't that the dream? Like, console experience, on the go.
Yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
I also love the most of the PS4 the crossplay the
oh the streaming.
The streaming.
Yeah, live streaming of PS4. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like some people say like, oh, what are you gonna do? Like, you know, play it on the can. Yeah, you know, play your PS4 game on the Vita when you're on the can or something. I do. And it's pretty awesome.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm guilty. But, like, that's the thing is, you know, and so who knows? Maybe somebody else is using the TV. Well, okay. Vita.
Yeah.
You know, throw it on the Vita.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So that's, I don't know why that gets in my craw. I think it's just because people like to be doomsayers. But, well, like, remember, most people, like, in the West, at least, well, not even the West, in America, let's be very clear, not Europe, but in America, go, oh, man, the PlayStation Portable, what a horrendous failure. Ha! We could wish for failures like that. It sold so well in Asia and Europe. Failed in Australia and America, but, oh, wow. Europe? Japan? holy crap.
I still use mine.
Your PSP?
Yeah.
I do sometimes.
I use mine. Granted, it's because it's been cracked and I can play PS1 games, like PS1 games that I own. I can basically do stuff, get the data off the disc, and then put it into my PSP, and I can play PS1 games that I cannot play that are because they're not available on the PSN.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, it's nice to be able to do that. And also, there's some of my favorite games are on the PSP still. Valkyria Chronicles 3, namely.
Like, oh, yeah, that one was great.
Yeah, and Crisis Core.
Beat me to it.
Yeah, Crisis Core and Type-Zero. Like, I really didn't like Type-Zero very much, I'm not going to lie. Mm. But I did enjoy the co-op, which only exists on the PSP version.
Mm. Wait, it's not on the PS4 version?
Nope, he cut it out. I talked with him about it. I asked him why he did it. When I talked with Tabata about that, that was my big thing. As I was like, wait, you cut out the co-op? And he's like, well, yeah, it was always just kind of an extra little feature in there. And our choices were delay the game for a year so that we could build the internet infrastructure needed to play Type-Zero online, or cut the damn feature and do it a year early. And I can't fault him, but I can be sad.
Yeah. Logistically, I can see his decision with that, if that's the case. Well, yeah,
it's too bad they don't have a system like, what is it called? Ad Hoc Party for PS4.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because Ad Hoc Party, man, I played Peace Walker on Ad Hoc Party. And I played a lot of
You might
Type
want
Zero.
To explain what Ad Hoc Party is, because I
It did come don't... out in the West, but like okay, so but... few people probably know about it. Ad Hoc Party was this really cool program that you could download on your PS3. And what it would do is it would... so you had to have your PlayStation 3 plugged in with a hard wire, with that. Mm-hmm. And then it would use the wireless connection to make your PS3 pretend it was another local PSP. Mm-hmm. But what it was actually doing is your PS3 was connecting with somebody else's PS3 that was also connected to somebody else's PlayStation Portable. So using that, you could basically do internet play with two PSPs for games that weren't designed to have it, to have online internet.
Yeah. Like, basically games that were only restricted to local play.
So, like, Monster Hunter, that was a big one.
Oh, yeah.
You could do Type-Zero, Macross, Gundam versus Gundam, all that stuff. Yeah. You could do it. I mean, some had various degrees of how well they worked, but most of them played pretty well if you had a good connection. I played a lot of Peace Walker that way over the internet. And I played some Macross like that, and it wasn't as good. It was a little choppy. But
Speaking of Peace Walker and Metal Gear, I didn't want to talk about Metal Gear this time, but... But I no I did want to I wanted to avoid talking about it because I want to talk about it so much. But yeah, I'm let's see, I've gotten quiet. I'm still in the interim between.
Whoa. You're not trapped in the room anymore? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, I wanted to talk about that. That's the thing. I've gotten quiet. I've found the interim where you've captured her, but she's not really a buddy yet. But yeah, what happened was. So, there is this room on the... When you develop the medical platform on your mother base, there is a room in that medical platform. It's kind of a semi-secret room.
Yeah.
Like, if you need to know that it's there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not... You're, like, most people are not going
to
go hunting.
No, it was basically... They told me to... Like, it was... There's a mission where, like... Also, it's like, you better go find Quiet. She's on the medical platform. And granted, she's right there. She's like, like right underneath the helipad.
Yeah.
But I totally missed the signs. And so, yeah, I searched around until I found secret room.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you go in there and there's stuff that goes on in there. Sans spoilers. And, but what happened was when I went into that room, event cutscene started and then I regained control and I tried to leave the room. And then my screen went black, and it stayed black, and it stayed black.
Yeah.
And, I waited for about, I was thinking, okay, maybe it's caught in a little loop, maybe it'll get out of it. You know, sometimes, like, you know, I deal with installing shit on computers. I know that stuff can sometimes take time. So, I was like, all right, I'll give it 1 hour. screen still stayed black. So I was just like, okay, it's stuck. So I quit out of that, restarted. Unfortunately, the game has an autosave feature, so when it reloaded, I was still in the room. And every time I tried to leave the room, same thing was happening. I was just like, oh, fuck, is my save game borked? And you suggested that I delete and reinstall the game, save my save file, and then, delete the game, and then reinstall it. Try that, still didn't work.
And rebatch and everything,
Nothing worked. I looked around online, and actually, I did find somebody on Steam. There was a message board where it was like, someone ran into the exact same problem, but it was just like one thread, and there was nothing else, and people were just like, tough luck, tough shit, things like that. Nothing was really helping. There were no solutions.
Uh-huh.
And so I was just like, oh god, do I have to start this whole thing over again? And then, there's a thing when you open up, you know, you open up your main, you can open up your, your iDroid, and you can open up the system menu.
Yeah.
I opened up the system menu, and it says, there is a command where you can, connect online, disconnect, you can, settings, things like that. There's also a command that says restart mission.
Oh, and that took you all the way out.
And yeah, I wasn't on a mission.
But it takes you what, back to the landing
helicopter.
On the helicopter?
Yep. Takes me back to the helipad. And so I was just like, oh. Okay.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Oh my god, I was just like, I'm out. Okay, cool. And so just in case, I saved my save,
yeah.
Backed up my save, and then I went back into the room to see if it would trigger it again or anything. And actually, because I'd already seen the cutscene and it saved it, I was past it. So I could get back out of the room. I can freely go in and out of the room, so I'm fine.
Yay!
Yeah, so
freedom.
I'm back on track now. Yeah. That was kind of, I'd spent well over, 40 hours just faffing about, collecting people and stuff and shit and stuff like that. I hadn't really progressed the story that much, but I'd spent a lot of time, and I was just like, and I was in kind of a comfortable place where I'd amassed the sort of equipment and shit like that where I was happy. I was just like, am I going to have to go through all this again? And fortunately, I didn't, so.
That's good, because, starting over completely in this game would.
Yeah, it's a long game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a lot to do.
I like the whole thing with the attempt to get the secret ending that everybody's trying. They formed an online group called Philanthropy to disarm all the nukes in the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is news. I don't know how many people know this, but yeah, there's a thing. I think it was the Steam version. They poked around it, and they found there's something in there. There's this ending called Peace, and what they figured out was they basically, pieced together is
And some people got it to run. Some people have gotten the whole ending to run.
There's videos up there, but Konami was really quick about take that shit down, because that's kind of important. And what it is that basically they've pieced together is that you need to disarm every single nuke.
Yeah.
It is quite literally world peace. Everybody loses their nukes.
Yeah, it either needs to be that, or the other idea is that at the time that the game is set, there were 60,000 nukes in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it could possibly be instead that you have to disarm 60,000. Either way,
yeah. Either way, yeah. That's kind of one of the magic of games.
Yeah,
it's very very real. It's this very impossible ending. It's not completely impossible.
Yeah,
but it means you have to give up your nukes, which is a tactical advantage. When it comes to the online stuff. And there are always people who will be dicks.
Yep. Yeah, no, and I love how the dicks try to rationalize it. They're like, well, you need 60,000 nukes to exist. So we're just building them, It's oh, come on, you're just being a dick. It's cool.
Yeah, but it's fine. That's the nature of it. It's a game, so it's safe to be a dick there. It's not the real world.
Right.
So, but it's got this very sort of, it's kind of mind-boggling, the fact that they put that in there.
Yeah, and likely no one would ever have seen it if we wouldn't have known it existed.
Yeah, but it still existed, and that's pretty fucking awesome.
Yep, it's pretty fun.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, as you said, there's a group calling themselves the philanthropers.
Yeah. Philanthropy is the good guys, and then the people who are being dicks are the philosophers.
Philosophers, yeah. But they're, like, there are these groups that are actively fighting to get rid of nukes, and another group that's trying to make more nukes.
Yep, but you know what I love about that is, like, I was looking into them the other day, and they've created an emblem, a very cool emblem. Mm-hmm. An emblem I will never use. And it's so funny, because they're like, oh, yeah, we've created this emblem, except it doesn't include the butterfly. So so I'm like, guess what? Never using that.
Fuck, I'm not going to use that. No, once I get the butterfly, fuck, I ain't taking that off. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's like, there's nothing you could say or do that would make me remove the butterfly. So, yeah. Sorry. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm going to go through and make my emblem very, very close to theirs, just with the butterfly instead of the globe. But, yeah. It's just a kind of a funny thing that it's like, you weren't thinking that through if you ever thought anyone would change that. But I do love the little secrets I found out you can get, but only if you take off the butterfly, as we'll say.
Really?
Yeah, there's basically getting an S rank in every mission gets you Raiden. You can play as Raiden, basically.
Oh, wow.
And also, what is it? And passing every single mission gets you the Cyborg Ninja outfit.
Oh.
They're just costumes, okay. But they do up movement speed. I think the Cyborg Ninja is 130% movement speed, and Raiden is 50%. You can actually outrun trucks with Raiden.
That is nice.
Yeah, and that absolutely makes a lot of things easier. Oh, but yeah. I'm still not giving up my freaking butterfly, so sorry.
Wait, you can't get the S on all the missions? Oh, that's right.
You can't get the S on all the missions, because... if you keep because the butterfly, you don't get one of the missions.
Missions, right. Yeah.
It's an advanced form of dickery.
Yeah. Do you think you can explain that without spoilers?
Because
I'm not 100% sure all of our listeners know about this. Because
Near the end of Metal Gear Solid 5, a main character will leave your party and never return. Mm-hmm. However, you can prevent the trigger for that mission happening. Like, that mission will never appear if you keep the butterfly in your logo. So, if you want to keep said character, you keep the butterfly in your logo, and you just accept the fact that you're never going to do those missions.
Here's a question. Mm-hmm. If you, as you said, you back up your save file.
I backed up my save file on a USB stick. Put it on my computer.
And then you took off the butterfly, the mission happened.
Did it, got my trophies.
Mm-hmm. Did you get all the... But
not all of them. I'll have to actually do it again once I have all
the missions. Does it unlock... But would that unlock Raiden and the Cyborg Ninja? And then if you reloaded, would you still have them?
No. Because the moment you put back in the old save...
Okay, so it's not like a DLC content sort of thing.
No.
It's not that sort of unlock. Yeah.
No, I wish, but...
Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like, oh, yes, well, you can have this thing that makes you run at super speeds. And it's like, it's like, look, I have 1,400 people on bases, right?
Yeah.
I need to be able to clear out checkpoints with ease, so.
Yeah, I've got D-Dog right now. I don't have the horse right now because I just got D-Dog, so I'm running around a lot.
He's fun.
And, yeah.
D-Dog's
fun, but. D-Dog's fun, but, like, running from one side of the map to the other is not fun. So.
It's called the Jeep, man. Fulton some Jeeps, and... Mm-hmm. Fulton some Jeeps, and...
I can't do it yet.
You don't have that yet?
I don't have the
cargo. Alright, well, then just memorize some places where some Jeeps are and land there.
Yeah. Yep.
That's what I suggest. Jeeps make everything better.
But, yeah, but the whole butterfly thing, losing that character... How the fact that it ties into the ending that was supposed to be?
It seems like it. The way I see it is that there was an extra ending to the game. I think we talked about this. Comes on the, like it was never finished, it was never completed, but some of the cutscenes were and a lot of the art was. And so they kind of put it together into a couple minute video to show you what was supposed to happen, which comes with the collector's edition of the game. So... props on that, right? It's not a complaint. That's a, well, I'm glad I at least got to see what the ending was supposed to be. And then However, it was very clear that, like that final area is set up in such a way that the character that leaves your party would have been able to return at that point.
Yeah.
And almost certainly would have, because...
Yeah.
Because of plot, that I'm not going to spoil, but basically, like, the person that leaves would be the one person able to help Snake.
Yeah.
And in this final extra area that never happened.
Yeah.
But of course, since that never happened,
yeah,
suddenly that character goes bye-bye forever. unless you have the butterfly emblem, so butterfly for life, bros.
Yeah.
And backing up saves. So that's what I did. It's kind of a funny thing, especially now that I've done every mission, done every side mission, and all that good stuff. But it is interesting that that they chose a logo without the butterfly. I'm like, so you're saying like 3/4 of the people that you have are not going to have the actual logo that you guys chose? Okay, well that's cool. But I love it because Metal Gear Online will launch next Tuesday. I think
so.
Yeah, it's gonna just be butterflies. Butterflies everywhere.
No, everybody's got butterflies.
Everybody is part of Butterfly Team, you know? Yeah. It's gonna be like, how many people on Butterfly Team?
Yeah.
Everybody's butterflies. Like, I wonder if they realize that that's what would happen, that people would be like, butterfly? I'll be a butterfly. Are you kidding? If that's what it takes, well, I will be the most majestic butterfly ever.
I get the feel, considering the fact that, like, you know, the meme is kind of incomplete.
Yeah,
it was not the intent.
No, but it is kind of funny.
I do kind of get the feeling that do you get the feeling that perhaps the butterfly emblem, that sort of function of it, was put in there in place because that ending is gone?
Maybe, because it's, like, so oblique. Like, I don't know how people... Like, I think it was discovered mostly because people were just using the butterfly emblem for whatever reason. Yeah. I know I used it before I knew it had any special effect. And were like, man, why am I at the end of the game and, like, two missions are missing? What's going on? Yeah. And people were like, huh, that's weird. I wonder why that is. And then, you know, by chance, somebody fiddled around and was like, oh, well, that fixed it. Huh, that was weird.
Or either that, or they didn't have the butterfly emblem on, and they just went into the...
No, because that's what I was getting. I was getting lots of people that were hitting mission 41 and being like, whoa, what the hell just happened? But I hit mission 41, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean? What do you mean? This thing that you're saying happened did not happen to me, and I'm not complaining, but what? Like, what's going on? And, I've heard it described that it keeps your affinity with a character, with the character who leaves at a lower than max level, and the character has to be at the max level to leave.
Yeah, it prevents them from reaching the max level.
Yeah, and do I think that maybe like that was added in after the fact? Yeah, because I can't figure out why else it would exist.
Yeah.
Like,
do you think that
effect has absolutely no use other than in this exact specific situation?
Something just occurred to me.
Okay. All right, everybody, put on your tinfoil hats. Here we go.
Well, no. Would you be... No, it's not no conspiracy theory thing or anything, but it's more like wishful thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But you know how most of the Metal Gear games have had a substance or...
Subsistence or whatever. Yeah, it's been both.
Basically, a upgraded version... Well, the same game with added stuff.
Yeah, sure. Tweaked cameras or extra things or ride in skateboarding on the big shell. I'm not going to let anybody forget that happened. I played it.
But wishful thinking is that they release a subsistence version of Metal Gear Solid 5 with the actual ending in it.
No. Nope. Don't see
I know, it. It's not
nope.
probably not going to happen, but God, that'd be nice.
Yeah, like... I don't see it happening because I don't think there's enough money in it for them to do it. Because, it's quite clear. The way I see it is very clear. It's that the game, you have a game, a multi-million dollar game, the last big multi-million-dollar game coming out of Konami, right?
Yeah.
And it's been in development for years, right? For an entire console generation, it has been in development. And you walk in there and, you know, they release basically the first level, the prologue, early.
Yep.
Make some money off of that to help offset the fact of the fact that it is a very, 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 very expensive game and very long development time.
Yep.
And then one day you walk into a room and you go, "Oh, how's it going?" And it's like, "Well, we have Afghanistan kind of done, and we have, you know, Africa kind of done, and oh, this island, the island we've just started on the island. Look, we have the cutscenes kind of done." And somebody went, "No."
Yeah. No, that this game needs to come out.
This game is done.
Yeah.
Sorry. And that's definitely to the detriment, because the climax is missing.
Yep.
It's missing. And
I would really like if somebody went and did what they, obviously Konami would never allow them to, but people have done with, what is it?
Knights of the Old Republic?
Yeah. Knights of the Old Republic 2. Yeah.
Well, one, they did some stuff on 1. They added in the cut ending to 1 as well, which was nice.
Mm.
Yep. Okay. Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah. You should do that. You should play the cut ending. I like that. Oh, okay. That's my favorite ending.
Okay.
Because I was surprised that it was, because I tried for that ending when it first came out just because of how I played the game.
Mm-hmm.
And when it wasn't there, I was like, "Are you kidding? How could this ending not be there?"
Oh.
And then I find out, 3 or 4 years later, that, oh no, the ending is there. The sound files are still in the game. They just cut it because it's sad.
Because development. But yeah,
not because of development. They actually cut it because, plot reasons.
Oh, okay.
Because it makes it so you can't have a sequel in Knights of the Old Republic.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's why I really like it. It was very much the end of the story.
Well, the thing is that my experience with Knights of the Old Republic is I played 2 first.
That's weird.
Yeah, I know. But, I'd heard, everybody had you know, I was raving about Knights of the Old Republic. I didn't have an Xbox, so I couldn't play 1. And, you know, I'd heard about, all this great stuff, so I looked for it, and I could only, at the time, I think I could only find 2 for some reason.
Mm.
Some reason or another, I only found 2. For some reason, I don't know why. Normally, I would, you know, I would normally get the first game first, but, I ended up getting the second game first. And I played it first. And, somebody on Kotaku has written about it, I think. The fact that, 2 is the better game. Has made an argument for it.
Yeah, I completely disagree with that. But, yes, okay.
I actually agree with that, though. I agree with that argument. Because it, 2 drastically changed the way I look at the Force. That whole Star Wars thing, light side, dark side. It drastically changed that.
No,
the way I feel about that.
I think it did that really well. Absolutely. But the thing is, from 1, I already looked at it that way.
Mm.
That was how I played 1. I played 1 when it first came out for PC. But I know what you're talking about. But no, that's actually how I played 1 originally, which is the idea that There are people out there who can embrace the dark side and not necessarily become straight up evil crazy pants.
Yeah.
And that's very much kind of what the focus is of 2 with Kraya.
Yeah.
The idea that can, it's like, was so-and-so a Sith? Absolutely. Yeah. Did so-and-so fall to the dark side? That's an entire different question. And I liked that a lot.
Oh,
but I already was playing that way when I played 1. So I was like, yeah, totally. That's exactly what happened.
Thing is, I went in... Look, I had... Because, you know, because that... God, I don't remember when this was. I think this... Yeah, this was definitely before... this was, after Phantom Menace. I think it was shortly after I'd watched Attack of the Clones.
What? Knights of the Old Republic?
When I played. Yeah.
Knights of the Old Republic 2. I can tell you when I played it. I played it right after it came out, so that must have been 2004? 2003? One of those two. Either came out in 2003 or 2004 is when 2 came out. And that's on Xbox.
Which is before the Revenge of the Sith came out, right?
No, trying to remember.
After, okay.
I think. God, I hope so.
But yeah, like, what?
But no, like, it's very. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I have to return the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith. Like, yeah, well, like, whatever. I mean, it's always been like Star Wars had always been, you know, Lucas's brainchild. It's Lucas's thing, and I never really looked at like other stuff as like, oh, that's somebody else's, you know, take. You know, that's their stuff, but it's not really Star Wars. Like even the Timothy Zahn stuff. Mm. Which is really good, but I'd always say it's like that's somebody else's take. It's not really Star Wars. Mm. This is fanfic the way I saw it.
Mm.
And you know, Lucas's whole thing was his whole shtick was like, you know, light side, dark side. If you're dark side, no, you're completely evil. You're a baby killer. You you drink the blood of virgins, stuff like that. If you're light side, no. Nothing, you know, you're always correct. Nothing's wrong, you know. You're infallible, sort of thing. And so I started playing too, and it immediately turned that on its head. It's just like, yeah, you saved this guy. You gave him money, but in the end, like, did you really help him? Sort of thing. Like, it adds a lot of questions like that, and it puts it in your face, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong, one does a lot of that too. Besides, you know, if you played like I played, which I did, but like you have Jolie. I mean, he's the prime example. Jolie Bindo, who is a neutral Jedi. Like, he's not really even a Jedi anymore. He's pure neutral. He doesn't think that the dark side is evil, and he doesn't think the light side is good. He thinks that the Force is the Force.
Yeah,
and I think my favorite thing about how the books I have read every Star Wars book that takes place past Return of the Jedi, and a fair amount of the prequel ones, even though I didn't really like those as much. But yeah, all post Return of the Jedi books I read before they were all scrapped in favor of new continuity. But that's fine. I had a good time with those series, so yay. But yeah, a lot of those deal with like different ways that people interpret the Force. And people don't agree, and some people think, yeah, you can use the dark side and not be evil. And other people are like, no, are you kidding? It is evil, by definition.
And that's the thing, as I'm saying. Like, I had not gotten any exposure to any, like, really any exposure to any of that. And I was just, like, under the Lucas philosophy of, like, you know,
evil! Fruits of the devil!
Because, like, you know, that's Star Wars. I mean, obviously, it's not how the real world works, but it's just, like, in that Star Wars. And
yeah.
So, you know, I enjoyed it. I mean, I love one, but
really,
well, I like two more.
I think two played better, and I think two went to better places. But I really, the thing is, Knights of the Old Republic is built on a twist, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a good twist. Yeah. It was a really good twist. It was well done. It's one of those that has it's a twist that has so much foreshadowing, but you don't notice it. And then the best thing is the big reveal of the whole game. I'm not going to spoil what it is, but the big reveal of the whole game is basically it replays every single line that foreshadowed what they're about to reveal. So halfway through the reveal, you figure out what the reveal is.
Which is always the best.
Yeah, and then you go, okay, yes. And it's a great one. It's a great one, and large parts of the game can change based on the order in which you do the different planets and when the reveal shows up.
Yeah.
So, and then you can have lots of fun stuff. It's also another one of those games where, like, if you have a high charisma, which so many people use as a dump stat, but if you have a high charisma, you can just make the game so much more interesting. there's so many hidden options that they put in there for people like me who pump charisma that it's great. Or, you know what I mean, talking stuff.
Yeah.
I think it actually
persuasion.
Is. Oh, it's persuasion. That's right. That's what they called it in KOTOR. But yeah. Yeah, which is also kind of why I really dislike a lot of what happens in The Old Republic, the online one. Because they butchered some of my favorite characters. Boy, did they. They
never fully got into that one.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I actually really like it it's what I want in an MMO. It's basically a big, giant, epic plot where you actually do matter and you're not random minion guy. Like, because you actually have a story arc. That by the end of the story arc, you feel like you've accomplished something. I just don't particularly like how they tied in Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2. But then again, it's very much, it's one of those things that you always have a problem with. When you take a character who the player controlled and bring said character into a game where they don't control that character, right?
Yeah.
And they have no say over that character's history, it seems way out of place. It's like, oh, yeah, but that's not how I played that character at all. Like, what? This is nothing like the choices I made, which well, at least, gets yeah, you. I mean, you know what I mean? It just, it's kind yeah, of like, yeah. It's like, oh, really? This is what they think it was? Oh, this is what they've decided, huh? This is the route they chose. This is the official one, huh? Ugh, yuck.
Which makes me glad they gave you that option in Dragon Age Inquisition where you could make your own.
Well, history. I mean, in between 1 and 2, you could do that too. They made it so you could carry on your choices that you made in the first game, and therefore everything seemed to fit, which was good. Yeah. It was just like, but when it becomes an MMO, you can't do that anymore. You gotta choose what it really is, and I was like, ugh. And I read the tie-in book that was supposed to be all the history of what happened to the main character after the first KOTOR, and God, wasn't very good. Was not what I was expecting, and I kind of went, really? This is what we're doing, huh? This is your big setup, and flat. Fell flat.
So Final Fantasy, Metal Gear, and Star Wars. And that's the Old Republic. I guess that's our podcast for this episode.
That's pretty solid stuff right there.
Yep.
Well, Evergreen topics. That's what we're doing.
Yep. That's the thing. It's like, well, we're having you on the podcast. I was usually concerned that we might end up just going into anime all the time. And for the past two episodes, we've just been talking all video games. So.
Okay. Let's see if I can. Upcoming headline. All right, you ready? Here we go. Upcoming headline is going to be, cute girls doing cute things. ... In the zombie apocalypse. Look forward to it.
Okay.
There we go. There's our anime tie-in. I've got it. Check it.
Oh shit! I just realized I hadn't thought, because it's my turn. I hadn't thought of a good outro song. Well, I'll think of something and I'll pop it in here. But anyways, you can find us at oneofus.net. This is Wayward Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Wayward Podcast. You can email us questions at waywardpodcast@gmail.com. I'm Toshi.
I'm Richard.
And where can we find you, Richard?
You can find me on Kotaku, or you can find me on Twitter at Biggest in Japan, as I am the one man alive arrogant enough to choose the title. That's right, I wasn't on Twitter for years. And nobody picked Biggest in Japan? Come on, guys, grow an ego. Disappointing.
Alrighty, so that's been our episode. I guess we'll see you next time.
Bye.